Blog Talk Radio.
Tony Pennycal.
We got a good show for you today. We have two MMA fighters. The first one's going to be on at 8:30. We have Dwayne Bang Ludwig. This is a UFC fighter. He's going to be fighting in August against Amir Scala, who was the Ultimate Fighter winner, I think, a few seasons ago. Just had a fight in March. That was pretty intense. A lot of good striking, a lot of throwing around. Overall, it was a good show. And so Dwayne Ludwig's going to be going up against him. He's just coming off a win against Nick Oshipchak, in which he broke his hand in the fight last November. So we're going to have to ask him about all that stuff. And we also have Danny Downs, who is a WEC veteran. And he's going to be appearing on another show pretty soon here. I'm not sure the exact date, but we'll ask him about that. He's going to be on in the 9 o'clock hour. So it's going to be a night of MMA tonight. But we do have a lot of good boxing stuff to talk about, of course. The big fight coming up this weekend. Manny Pacquiao versus Shane Mosley, and I don't know if you get to see it, Tony, but Shane actually flew himself to the fight to Las Vegas. Did you see that?
No, I did not. What do you mean? He like, actually commandeered the plane?
Yeah, he has his own jet that he flew himself. He piloted it to Las Vegas from Big Bear.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I didn't even know he was a pilot. So.
Neither did I. Yeah, it's news to me. Rich, before we get into the Mosley-Pacquiao fight, which I do want to talk about in depth, I wanted to say this, you know, to start off our show tonight. I hope you're sitting down. Rich, if you actually decide to fly out to Philadelphia and then get off at the airport and travel about 40 minutes and come over to my house and you look at my cable bill, you'll actually see that I have ordered a UFC pay-per-view card last week.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Actually, but do you want the full story behind it?
Sure. Might as well.
I had a bunch of friends of mine over for a picnic, and they're all hanging out, and they're like, "Hey, you mind if we order the fights here? Here's $60. I said, "Order away. Put it on the big screen, high def."
All right.
So, I think I watched only one fight on there. That was the one, and I don't remember the guy's name, actually. That's how pathetic I am. Where the guy had his, like, forehead about protruding after the point he looked like a unicorn.
Yeah, that was Jose Aldo, the guy that convinced me never to fight MMA. He had a fight against the guy who also was... pretty well known, not as fierce, but apparently the fight was kind of a slow fight for Aldo, or at least for what he's used to. And the word was that he had a lot of trouble cutting weight because of the time off that he's had. Although he didn't really mention that much of a struggle after the fight when they interviewed him, he had to dismiss himself from one of the pre-fight press conference deals because he was lightheaded. So that should tell you something. But anyway, the fight was definitely very interesting, but that was a pretty ugly hematoma. And Big John McCarthy as the ref, and he could have stopped it at any point because of that, and they were worried that it was going to burst and everything like that, and it really reminded me of that Rockman versus Holyfield fight.
That was what I was thinking about, actually. I got a story for you, man. I think I talked about this a couple years ago on the air. Bernard Fernandez, who is a very well-known boxing writer, he's based out of Philadelphia. I've got to meet him at a couple fight cards. And, Bernard Fernandez knows boxing. He, writes a weekly column in the Philadelphia Daily News, which is one of our major papers. But he also covers a lot of fights. I mean, this guy goes out to Vegas. This guy goes to a lot of big cards. And he was writing a column a few years ago on some of the craziest things he's ever seen covering the sport. And he said he was watching a fight one time, and one guy came in, he already had a lump on his head. And, that could be something from a sparring injury. I mean, even with headgear on, you are going to get injuries, especially if you clash heads. I mean, I had my, I used to spar wearing contact lenses, because my eyesight was so bad. And the one time sparring, we clashed heads, and my whole eye swelled shut. I couldn't get the contacts out for 3 days. So this guy came in and had a little bit of a lump on his head. So his opponent started literally jabbing the shit out of this lump, and it kept getting bigger and getting bigger. So finally it burst open, and an infestation of lice actually crawled out of the guy's skull.
Gross.
Yeah, it is pretty gross, ain't it?
Yes. Well, there was a bunch of other good fights on that UFC card that sounds like you missed, but... the big upsets didn't happen in either category. Randy Couture was actually an underdog, surprisingly, going into his fight with wasn't quite as dramatic as the movie, and he didn't put his arms up to telegraph it like it was in the movie, but it was the same type of move. He lifted one leg up, it looks like a fake, at least the way Liotta did it, and then boom, you come up with the other kick. And they call it a fuck kick in MMA. And it just clipped right in the jaw, teeth area there, and put him down, and the ref jumped in. And some might have thought, it's just Randy Couture, you're going to give him a little more credit, give him time to recover, but they thought it was a justified stoppage. He's pretty much adamant that it's all over for him, that's it, no more fights. We talked about maybe him fighting Fedor, but then I saw an interview recently where he said that's not in the works. It has been talked about. He doesn't think it's possible. So I doubt we'll see that. And I think Randy is just going to be content going off into the sunset in the movies, doing his movie thing, and just kind of helping the sun. what happened, but he was holding his mouth a little funny. Definitely got a real hard kick to the face there. And so I guess the odds makers were right in making him the underdog, but I didn't expect him to lose that fight. It was kind of disappointing watching. But then the other fight that could have been an upset, Jake Shields versus George St. Pierre. And I think Shields did all right, but he just played right into George St. Pierre's game plan. George St. Pierre is obviously very respectful of the striking game now. He's working with Freddie Roach in the boxing, and it showed. He just went almost all five rounds on the feet, mostly punches, a few kicks here and there, of course. But it was an interesting fight. Gene Shields actually supposedly poked him in the eye. And you know, I hear all these people saying there's definitive evidence, but I haven't seen it. The punch that I saw that I thought did it was replayed during the fight. So I don't know where all these people are saying he was poked in the eye. Seemed to me that he was punched, but his eye was really bad after the fight. He said he couldn't see, I think, after the third round. But it was all George St. Pierre. I mean, even with one eye, did a good job and controlled the pace of the fight, controlled just about every round, and just dominated the fight. But afterwards, he sort of backed off of the idea of fighting Anderson Silva in the pound-for-pound, winner takes all, best of the best fight that they've been talking about if Anderson wins his next fight against Kiyoshi Okami. And it's seems now they're going to appease Nick Diaz, who's been asking to fight the best of the best in the UFC, and they're going to try to make a fight between him and George St. Pierre. So that's interesting. I don't know if it's going to come around to that. I know Dana White's been trying to say business as usual. They're going to abide by the contracts, the Strikeforce contracts. So that was talked about, but then again, he also said, you know, we own it. I can do what I want. And Scott Coker, the CEO of Strikeforce, has come out and said that he doesn't see anything that would bar the cross-fighting, cross-promotional fighting there. So we'll see. I don't know what's going to happen there. But another fight, just going to read through the results real quick here, and then we'll go on to some other news stories. Vladimir Matyushenko kicked the crap out of Jason Brills, a knockout in the first round, 20 seconds in. It was a pretty interesting fight. Ben Henderson beat Mark Bocek by decision. Rory McDonald beat Nick's little brother, Nate Diaz, by unanimous decision. A real rough and tough fight there, which kind of made me wonder why all those stories came out saying that Dana White was going to right after the event and fly in to see Nick Diaz because Nate Diaz was on the card and obviously Nick Diaz was going to corner him. He was there at the fight, so I don't understand why they would have to fly out to California to sit down if he's already at the fight, but I don't know where that came from. But anyway, Jake Ellenberger beat Sean Pearson by knockout in the first round. Claude Patrick beat Daniel Roberts by decision. Ivan Menjivar, who's actually the first guy George St. Pierre fought in his whole career, he beat Charlie Valencia by TKO, by way of an elbow and some punches. Jason McDonald beat Ryan Jensen by submission. Pablo Garza beat Eve Jabouin by submission in the first round. And one of the most interesting knockouts I've seen in a long while. John McDessie beat Kyle Watson of The Ultimate Fighter fame by spinning backfist. Pretty good shot, right on the chin. And there was no doubt about it. He actually, it was kind of interesting because I was watching it, and it happened in the third round. And watching it, there was one point where Kyle Watson threw a spinning backfist at McDessie, and it missed. McDessie came back from his own and landed it, like showing him how to do it. But he didn't knock him out at that point. He knocked him out a little later. So I should have seen it coming, I guess. But another piece of news to come out of that card is Steven Seagal that's sort of taking credit for that crane kick for helping Larry the Machine to perfect that maneuver, even though...
Of course, that's a Miyagi thing.
Yeah, and I've also seen some stuff on tape from Lyoto Machida's own training tapes that show other people how to do that particular kick, and it's a staple of karate. I mean, it's in the movie Karate Kid. So I don't know if that's really true that Steven Seagal helped him perfect it, but he's been on a wave of publicity since then. All kinds of people talking about
it. Seagal had him, did he have him practicing it on, like, stumps on the beach?
I don't
think so. During the sunset, no less?
Yeah, right. I've heard a funny story that has been confirmed true by multiple sources that Steven Seagal actually shit his pants when a guy named Judo Gene LaBelle put him in a choke when he was, like, in his silent place. And Seagal said he couldn't be choked out or something like that. And, you know, the old man didn't look that formidable. And then he ended up getting choked out, and he left something in his underpants. Nobody's talking about that, because they're all talking about him being credited for all this training of Lyoto Machida. But who knows if it's actually true. Also, in other news, Manny Pacquiao says the biggest fight of his life is not in boxing. And he's been talking lately about more political stuff in his home country, in the Philippines. He says basically that fighting poverty in his country is more important to him than boxing lately. This exact quote is, "The biggest fight in my life is not in boxing. The biggest fight in my life is how to end poverty in my country." So the more we hear that kind of talk, and the more we realize that Floyd Mayweather is probably never going to agree to fight Manny. It's looking like it's going to be a fast track to Manny's retirement within the next couple of years here. And it doesn't seem like there's any big names for him to fight beyond Shane Mosley right now anyway, so... I would say probably the best bet after this fight, unless he loses, which is a huge upset on Mosley's part, then probably going to be Juan Manuel Marquez again. But we'll see. You know that we put the big story on the blog of your prediction there. There's a few people that think that Mosley might pull off the upset, but I'm not one of them. You're not one of them.
It's funny to say that. I got a friend of mine that I've known from Philadelphia for a long time. Now, he hates Manny Pacquiao. Hates him. So he'll try to discredit him any way he can. But, you know, okay, this, you can discredit, you know, guys, and then you can, you know, but make it look legitimate. Or you can discredit guys and, you know, just make it look like, you know what, you just hate the guy, so... You know, I really have no reason to even listen to your argument anymore. That's like, you know, me with Roger and Floyd Mayweather Sr. Everybody knows I can't stand either of those two bastards, that I think they are a disgrace to the sport. I think they're a disgrace to humanity. And there's no way that, yeah, I mean, you can make an argument and say, well, you know, they train Floyd, and he's, you know, he's great, and he's this and that. I'm like, you know what, here's the thing, it's like, yeah, they might, you know, train him, but, I mean, anybody could train him. He's an exceptionally talented fighter. It takes a good trainer to take a mediocre fighter and make him something above that. You know, and I'm trying to think of some good examples. But as I was thinking, Floyd Mayweather Sr. took over Oscar De La Hoya. You know what? Oscar De La Hoya already was a multiple time world champion. Well, you're taking one of the best fighters in the world. He's going to win more titles? What does that prove? Then it's like, but look at De La Hoya's record after Mayweather took over. Wasn't impressive. Even some of the fights he won, like Felix Sturm, he got his ass kicked. you know? And in the corner, the guy was giving no advice. If I'm working a corner and my fighter is getting beat, I'm going to sit there and try to, like, see what's not working and try to think of something else, saying, you know what? He's beating the shit out of you with the jab. You're going to have to catch that jab and jab with him to make him stop. Or slip the jab and counter. But, or either get close or get far away. Don't stay at the perfect distance. Those are things that you got to say to a guy that's getting beaten in a level like that. You can't just say, oh, you know, but, you know, why don't you go out there and beat that, you know, son of a bitch, or why don't you go out there and beat him, he's no good, he's a bum. That doesn't help. That doesn't, you know, give you any advice on how to do it. But this guy that I know, George, he does not like Manny Pacquiao. So when I wrote my article about 6 months ago regarding Pacquiao Margarito, Tony, you're wrong. Margarito's going to knock him out. And then he put a thing on Facebook today. He goes, the winner in the ninth round is going to be Shane Mosley. I've been to the Twilight Zone. You heard it first. I said, the last time you were in the Twilight Zone, you picked Margarito to knock him out. And after it was over, Margarito felt like he got knocked into the Twilight Zone. I'm like, you know, you got to stop betting with your heart and start betting with your head. Because that's what you do. That's like, you know, taking a team that's, you know, a 1-14, they're going up against a team that's 15-0. And you know what? It's like, well, who are you going to bet on? The one team's a 14-point favorite. Well, I'm going to beat the underdog. They're going to win. Well, you're betting with your heart. Yeah, I'm a Detroit Lions fan. I'm a diehard. They're going to beat, you know, the New Orleans Saints. Or they're going to beat, you know, whoever in the hell won the Super Bowl this year, the Colts or whoever the hell it was, or the Packers. No, they're not. They're going to get their ass kicked, and you better hope they keep it within 14 because you're going to lose money. But this guy, you know, he's a diehard anti-Manny Pacquiao, and, you know, and I can't get him to understand that, you know, would make Mayweather doesn't. Mayweather is going to just continually to, you know, regress a little bit. He's going to get slower. He's going to lose his reflexes. And you know what's going to happen? Eventually, same as what happened to Roy Jones, eventually, Father Time beats all.
Yep. Well, it's definitely still going to be a good fight, I think.
I think it's going to be a good fight, but I think what you're going to see is that maybe the first or second round, and Mosley realizes he's dealing with a person that's exceptionally fast. He's really going to start to tense up. He's going to start to freeze a little bit. And after about the third round, every round will be start really blending together, and it's going to be Pacquiao. I think it will go the distance, but I think it'll be very clear after the end of 12 rounds who won.
Well, speaking of boxing, I got to go to another Friday night fight event at the Cosmopolitan, and it was a spectacular place for a fight, except the weather didn't cooperate that much. We had some very high winds blowing around the pool deck of the Cosmopolitan where they had these fights this time. And I got to meet Teddy Atlas. I went right up to him during one of the intermissions, gave him a card, and tried to get him hooked up with the show. But apparently, Teddy is a very private guy. He doesn't believe in the internet. I mean, obviously, he believes it's there, but he just doesn't do email or anything like that. So he's been basically playing phone tag with my answering machine because he's got something with his phone number doesn't show up, and it just bounces straight to voicemail no matter what I do. I can't even answer his calls. He's called me like four times, so he definitely made of his word. He said he'd call me, and he did. And I also gave my card to Nonito Donaire, who was a photographer there at the event, and I haven't heard hide or hair of him. So I don't know what happened there, but Teddy's been trying to contact me. I've been trying to go through Keith Sullivan, who we had as a guest before, the lawyer there, who knows Teddy. And we're trying to work on it for next week or the week after. Teddy's obviously traveling most days on Thursdays for the Friday night fight, so it's tough for him to do it Thursday night, but he's trying. So we're hopefully going to have him one of these weeks. And if not, we'll play all of the answering machine messages. I don't know. It's probably about 6 minutes worth at this point. He keeps telling me what he's up to. He's got a lot of stuff that he's been doing for this big fight this weekend, the Manny Pacquiao fight. He's been telling me his whole schedule. He's been out to Bristol to ESPN headquarters and back out here now to Las Vegas. He's actually, I think, supposed to be calling me tonight again, but we'll see if I can actually answer it in time to him. That'll be good. But the fights themselves were pretty intense. Carlos Molina, who fought on the last card in the main event, fought Alan Conyers this time, who was a taller, lankier guy, but seemed to be less of a brawler type. He didn't exchange all that much. He looked very overmatched in the fight, and he got stopped a little bit early. It was the seventh or eighth round there. But, the fight was going to end in Molina's favor either way, barring a miracle. So I didn't have any problem with the stoppage, even though a couple people at ringside were a little bit pissed. But it was a good fight. And also, there was a couple other decent fights on the card. It was definitely a very well-matched card, for one. Just top to bottom, just great fighters. There was even a guy who, he was like 300 pounds, and he was a Native American guy who fought, I think, at light heavyweight, and fought a big black guy, and everybody in the crowd was kind of rooting for the Indian, big fat Indian. Even though he wasn't doing that well, the fight was just it was kind of funny to watch, but it was entertaining at the same time. It was a good show. But if you want to check out that report, see all the pictures, you can go on our blog, check that out. They had the palm trees up there, and the wind blowing. And one guy actually had his hat blow off. He was like one of the corner, and it blew off, and one ended up on the second deck balcony. And at one point, my bumper sheet blew away right off the table. So it's definitely a windy day for Las Vegas. That morning when I came out the house, I actually got met with a huge cloud of dust right off the bat. So I kind of expected it to be windier halfway up the building there at the Cosmopolitan. But one of the best parts about it was the huge screen they had. They basically used to put advertisements on there for the people coming down the strip to see. And they actually had the replays playing on there. So even if you had a bad seat, you could just look up at that and see what was going on. And I think they'll definitely do more of those shows there. The crowd seemed to be a lot thicker up there, whether it was because of the seating arrangements or they just wanted to go because of the unique environment that the people there. Lose you, Tony? Lost Tony.
Hey, you've reached Tony. I should reach the voicemail. When you hear the beep, do what you gotta.
Okay, I'm a little technical difficulties here. Want to fix that here, and actually we gotta get Dwayne Bag and Ludwig on here in a couple minutes anyway.
All right, there we go.
Okay, what happened?
I don't know.
Got disconnected.
What?
All right, well, we're going to get Dwayne Ludwig on here in 2 seconds. He's only got about 20 minutes, so we got to be right on time with him. Thank you.
Hello.
Hi, Mike.
Yo.
Hey, we have a Rich Wayne.
How you doing, buddy?
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good.
What we were discussing earlier, you got a big fight coming up against Amir Sadala in August.
Yes, August 14th.
Tell us a little bit about how that came about and what you're expecting out of that fight.
Well, how it came about, the UFC calls you and says, do you want to... No, the UFC kind of calls you and tells you, you're fighting this guy this day, and you say yes. That's pretty much how it comes about. We were supposed to fight end of March, but I received an injury, so I had to pull out of the bout. And they just rescheduled it for August 14th, which I'm glad, because I think it's a good matchup. We both match up well stylistically. And I think it's going to be a good test for me and for him as well, and it's going to be fight of the night. You know, it's definitely not going to be a lackluster fight for sure. We're going to go for it. He always brings it. And now it's going to be fun, so it's going to be fun for sure.
Well, now, actually, last week we had on a guy who said that you were a big mentor of his, Lou Cardella. So we already heard a little bit about your motivational skills, I guess, in addition to your fighting skills. So
always trying to improve.
All right. And you really fought a who's who over the years, a lot of big names. What would you say was your toughest fight so far?
Toughest fight so far has been against myself, you know, making sure I'm in the gym and training. But I take these big fights. A lot of the big fights are always like a friggin' 2-week notice, always catered for the other guy. But I'm too stubborn to say no. As far as an actual opponent, to answer your question, there's been a lot of good fights. Of course, like I fought Galmi and Pulver, Jim Miller. I've fought a lot of tough guys. And they've all been tough in certain ways. But as far as overall toughest fight in my career would be a Thai boxing match against Ole Larson, which was the final of the K-1 Max. That was I had to go through some mental issues. But during that fight, you know, it definitely put me in some danger, and I was lucky enough to come through that fight and win. So that was definitely a good test for me.
Talking about some of your tougher fights, Rich's co-host, Tony. Talking about tough fights, one thing I always thought about earlier in my career, there's two kinds of fights that were really the tough ones. The ones where it was just a difficult style, you know, to deal with. I always had trouble with, I was a boxer, so I always had trouble with, tall, really lanky fighters, and with me being short, really stocky, short arms. So it was like tall, lanky fighters. Sometimes, you know, they didn't hurt you. You just couldn't get close to them. Or the other kind of tough fight was one that, you know, you both drew a line in the sand and you beat the shit out of each other till one of you backed up. What kind of tougher fights are tougher for you? A stylistic one or one where you walk out of there thinking you got hit by a car?
You know, I guess it just depends on the opponent. Like, there could be physically tough fights, which I've had plenty of those, and there could be stylistically, you know, tough matchups. But I don't feel, as far as stand-up-wise is concerned, I do well with the shorter guys. I do just as well with tall guys as well. I just got to change my game plan a little bit. I've been doing it so long, I have little keys for certain styles. Whether he's a stocky guy or a tall guy, I have different tools for each fighter. But stylistically, as far as me being a striker, the toughest match would obviously be the wrestler who would take me down and just hold me. And that can always be an issue and make you hesitant with your strikes and make you hesitant to what you do. So that would be, I guess, the biggest disadvantage as far as an opponent would be, a wrestler who's going to push the issue, not give me any room, and just hold me down.
That makes a lot of sense.
Now, Dwayne, what would you say is your ultimate goal in the sport of MMA?
Well, the goal is to be recognized as one of the elite strikers of mixed martial arts throughout the world, which I think I'm in the top 10. But just have fun, man, not to put too much stress or pressure on myself, but just go out there and have fun. This is my dream as a fighter, and just test myself with each training camp and each opponent as they come along. And, it's all about self-development. I'm just going through the day, finding out who I am. And the career has been long and has been fun, and up to this point, I have a pretty good understanding of who my life really is, and I like myself when I look in the mirror.
Cool. Now, you're one of those rare guys who's actually fought in Strikeforce in the UFC before even the merger. What do you think happening in the future of the league now combined?
Well, you know, so far, I mean, the merger has just been a purchase, and there's still two separate entities, but hopefully they can start crossing the champions back and forth and seeing who is actually the number one guy in each division, which I hope happens with, of course, St. Pierre and Nick Diaz. And then what I would like to see is the winner of the Strikeforce Heavyweight Grand Prix fight the winner of the current UFC champion, whoever that might be. That would be the true test of the actual merger, because right now it's just two separate entities, and it's just business as usual until they start crossing them over.
The famous business as usual quote.
Before, yeah, it is, man. Strikeforce is Strikeforce, and UFC is UFC. Although it's under the UFC umbrella, but it's still two separate businesses.
Right, yeah. I think it'll definitely be interesting. Now, as far as all the fighters out there everywhere, do you actually have one or two fighters that you specifically watch a lot, you try to emulate, or that are considered your favorites?
I always like to watch Dan Hardy for, you know, the strikers, and Thiago Alves, and Marcin Dalla. I'm fans of all these guys as well, because they, you know, stylistically, they're the closest resemblance of myself, and I just try to learn, pick and choose things from them. And, but also, I learned to watch the jiu-jitsu players as well, and the wrestlers, and pick things from their game as well. And I'm always just trying to learn, man. Like, I watch all the fights. Every time there's a fight, I watch it, and I take notes, and I write things down, and I'm trying to work on things and get better. So it's definitely always, like I said, man, it's just self-development, it's just always learning, man. It's definitely a fun game.
Cool. And you had to deal with a little bit of an injury after your last fight. You broke your hand. What was that like?
That was another good little learning who Dwayne Ludwig is. I broke my freaking hand in the first minute of the fight, and I had to switch up the game plan a little bit, which wasn't too hard. I had to see how to steer away from punching him in the face because I didn't want to run into the head, so I started going the body, which in turn got him tired and brought him down to a slower pace, which was nice, which ended up helping me win the fight. And it's just one of those things, man. You know, until you get to that bridge and try to cross it, you don't know what's going to happen. And I thought, like, my plan was I was going to knock him out or knock him down and submit him. But with having the one hand, I definitely had to change the game plan a little bit. But it worked out. I squeaked by a decision, and I was happy with that. But I've had plenty of injuries before, during, and after fights, and it's just always fun to see how I react. I'm realizing I'm pretty tough, and I focus on what I can do and not what I can't do. I wasn't really... Like when I broke my hand, I said, oh, man, I can't punch him in the head. What am I going to do? I thought, okay, I got to punch him in the stomach now. I got to go for the softer target. So I'm looking in the mirror because I'm a guy who looks for what I can do and the avenue to accomplish the goal rather than staring at the freaking roadblocks.
Okay. And what do you love most about mixed martial arts? What's the best part?
The evolution. You know, the evolution, and one of the best things about mixed martial arts versus kickboxing, you can be totally gloved up and get ready to fight, and you can still go pee because your hands are free. That's nice.
All right.
It's hard to wipe your ass when you got the boxing gloves on.
Yeah, I always thought it would be funny to do, like, a skit for YouTube, you know, comparing boxing to MMA and just going on the gloves, like what you can do with MMA gloves on and what you can do with boxing.
Yeah. You do a lot. So here, one time I have this kickboxing bout, and I'm all geared up, I'm gloved up, taped up, mouthpiece, and getting ready to go. And I'm like, oh shit, you know what? I forgot to put my cup on. So my manager had to put my cup on. So here, and then freaking Peace Brat took a picture of Sven, my manager, putting my cup on with his hand down my pants, put my cup on. That was a good one.
I always remember watching a fight one time. It was like on ESPN or something like that, and they were showing the main event fighter getting ready in the locker room. And, you know, he was on his back, and he was, you know, doing his neck stretches and all that stuff. And he had his cup. He had, like, spandex on. He had his cup on over that. And he had his gloves on, and he had his shoes on. He didn't have his trunks on yet. And I said, how is he going to be able to pull this off? I'm like, now, I fought for, you know, a number of years, and I trained a lot, too. So there was one thing I didn't want nobody doing was putting my own pants on for me. I put my own pants on. Thank you very much.
Yeah, when the time comes, you got to make some adjustments.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I did one time. My very first amateur sparring session with another team, we went down to the Naval Academy. I was 18 years old, and I had sparred a couple times in our home gym, and I was so excited. I get in there, and, you know, we go about the first 30 seconds, and I get cracked in the mouth, and I realize I forgot my mouthpiece. Because it's just
nice.
A sparring session. So, it's like, you know, usually you get in there with the referee, and the referee checks. You got your mouthpiece,
yep.
You got your cup on, your headgear on tight, and it's like, you know, your gloves and the laces hanging out. This is a sparring session, you know. We weren't checking out. I'm going, like, the first round. I'm like, time out. Forgot the mouthpiece here. And then they're trying to, like,
that's funny.
I can't put it in myself.
Yep.
Well, it's better to forget your mouthpiece in your first scrimmage than to forget your conditioning. That'll be my first time going to Annapolis for boxing sport. Dwayne, what would you say is your favorite style? Do you have something that you lean towards as far as submissions or strikes for a lot of fights?
As far as style, what some of the techniques I like to perform in the fight? Is that the question?
Yeah, do you have a favorite submission or do you like striking?
Submission? I prefer more, choking submissions because they're a little bit more controlling rather than just like an arm lock or a heel hook or something because there's still so much play. So I think the choking submissions themselves are a little bit more controlled, and I like those better. And as far as striking, you know, not a single technique, but I just like to throw one or two things to set up the next step, the next attack. So it's a little chess game, it's definitely a game for me to throw one strike to see how it reacts to set him up for the next strike. Because it's rare that I'll just throw one strike in the intent of landing that one strike. I'm always trying to throw one thing to set up the next. It's just a game for me always, and it's fun. Well, I guess it'd be beating in the sports, you know, either beating Jens Poehler because who he was at the time, the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world, and just the way the fight played out, and I didn't even get him once and was able to stop him. It's either that or my fourth-second knockout in the UFC, which is pretty cool. So it's a toss-up between those two.
4 seconds?
Yep.
Wow. What did you do that with?
He punched him in the face before he punched me.
Was it a right hand?
Did you see that fight, with Jonathan Goulet in the UFC?
Oh, okay, yeah. I'm looking at your record here. 4 seconds. That's tough to beat. Actually, there was a video I saw this past week of a guy making his debut, and it wasn't in the UFC, obviously. It was Feeder League, I guess you call it now. And he threw a flying knee and an elbow, I think, and knocked the guy out in 5 seconds. But I thought that was
nice. Well, I knocked my guy out at the 4 second mark. The timekeeper called it 11 seconds. Not sure why.
I don't know. Yeah, that's
awesome.
Maybe it took the ref a few seconds to jump in. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's weird. So you should have the record.
Yes, I do. I do. That's my month prison record.
All right. Now, is there anything in particular that you do before a fight to get ready for a fight that you consider, like, the most important thing that you do?
Yes, running. I think that's one of the most important things for me because that puts me in shape. And when I run hills and I run fast. And it's definitely a test, man. Like, few people can run with me. So I know when I complete my miles and my times and the hills that I run where I can do it on a certain time, that's when I know I'm ready for a fight and I am not going to get tired. That's always a good thing, to know what you can perform. You can haul ass for 15 minutes, doing whatever you want, and you're not going to get tired. That's a nice little cushion to lay back on.
Yeah, the road work is definitely important. I know
from
studying Rocky Marciano, that was one of his signature things that he'd do all the time, is road work.
He was always in shape.
He actually got in trouble with his wife. He was trying to slip out one morning on their honeymoon to do his road work.
It's a 24-hour day job, so and she's got to understand that.
Yeah, yeah.
She's going to be sleeping in bed anyway. You don't go back to sleep. It's okay.
And I actually learned that myself when I boxed in college and to Virginia Military Institute for an exchange program. And that coach, former Marine, I guess he was a former, but he had a Colonel, and he through the hills of Virginia, 7.5 miles every Tuesday.
And, oh, nice.
Enjoy it. Although I didn't. But they got me in shape to get to the Nationals.
Yeah.
So
they're definitely getting you in shape, that's for sure. Running is nice. I love running.
And looking at your whole career there, what would you say? Is there anybody out there that you really want to fight in particular?
Yeah, Amir Sadala, because it's a good matchup. And I think he's got a lot of recognition right now, and it's a good matchup, and I'm just definitely happy about this fight.
And
there's other good matchups. Like I like to be matched up with Dan Hardy as well. I think he's another good guy that matches up well with me, and it would be a good fight for the fans. So maybe that could come to terms in the future.
Yeah, definitely. He's coming off a bunch of tough fights, so
yeah.
The UFC wants to put him up against somebody that is going to keep challenging him, because I don't know what's going to happen to him in the future. I know that he's sponsored by Zions, which is actually owned by the Fertittas indirectly, so I think they're going to keep him around no matter what, but most people would have been gone already after their third in a row loss, but he's still hanging around.
Yeah, but, you know, like, it's not like he's getting his ass beat. You know, like Sipir held him down for 5 rounds, Anthony Johnson held him down for 3 rounds, he got caught with Carlos Condit. I mean, that's, like, his real loss is Carlos Condit. You know, he got caught. But there's the two fights. It's not like he got his ass beat. He just got held down. So, and, you know, it's a stylistic thing. They're using their wrestling to nullify the situation, which is smart on their part, but not on the fans' perspective. But they're winning the fight, of course. But I don't care if Dan Hardy loses 15 fights in a row. He's always exciting to fight. He always comes to fight. The problem is, St-Pierre and Anthony Johnson did not come to fight. They came to hold him down. So I'd rather see Dan Hardy fight.
Do you have any role models inside or outside the sport that have helped you out along the way?
Yeah, Bob Schrutin, of course. He's helped me out quite a bit with the, you know, he's definitely taught me how to train. He's helped me out with the PR stuff. But the main thing is training. He taught me how to train to definitely push the issue. I have to sit back, man. And his work ethic is insane. And I was able to pick up on that a little bit. And I think I have a pretty good work ethic, which is from Bob Schrutin, which I appreciate.
Cool. Yeah, he actually turned Kimbo into a halfway decent fighter until he left him.
Yeah.
Boast.
Yeah, boxing training is intense for sure.
And what kind of things did he do with you to help you out primarily? Like, what was the number one thing that he helped you with?
High-paced workouts. But whenever he has me do a combination and I try it, it is a combination that fits 100% with my style. There's never no second guessing. So he just understands how I'm wired, and I understand how he's wired, and it's definitely just a perfect match, man. When he's coaching me, I don't second-guess anything. I know, man, I feel good. I try it, and it's on point. So that's definitely good. I trust him as a coach. I don't question anything that he says. So it's a belief factor.
Now, as far as the UFC, what's the best part about fighting in obviously, the number one league in the sport.
Well, it's good to know that you've accomplished so many things in your career that you've made it to, you know, obviously the UFC, the NFL, the NBA, whatever, the top organization in your field. That's always good to know. So, and they take care of their guys. You know, I'm not fighting for $1,000 for, you know, on a weekend. They're paying me pretty good money, and I appreciate that. I'm able to live my life and not have a second job. Although I teach at my own gym. Because I know too much not to teach, so I think it'd be a waste if I didn't. And again, I've created an affiliate program, and I think a lot of the kickboxing out there is crap. And I think if they follow a program that I've helped develop, then it'll help the kickboxing throughout the world, and especially the U.S. Because I think the U.S. lacks in kickboxing. There's a few good key schools out there, but there's a lot of other schools that teach below average techniques.
Awesome. And what would you say is the number one thing that could be done to get more kids involved in mixed martial arts?
One more time, what's the question?
What do you think could be done to get more kids involved in mixed martial arts coming up through the ranks?
I guess, you know, I mean, it's a safety issue. You know, parents don't want their kids beat up, so they just, as far as mixed martial arts, one of the main things, I think the most successful mixed martial artists are wrestlers. So I think more kids just need to wrestle because they can wrestle full bore. And, of course, injuries still happen, but they can wrestle full bore and not get injured, even though freak things happen. So as far as, and then especially jiu-jitsu 100% and not get injured as well. So I think there needs to be more focus on the jiu-jitsu and the wrestling, which obviously are 100% mixed martial arts. And then the striking can come later in their teens or 20s or whatever when they want to, and they feel a bit more comfortable with actually getting punched in the face.
Yeah, that's always important. You know, you got to kind of
yeah.
do it.
Yep.
With sports, like mixed martial arts, with boxing, it's a way to get kids to do something productive while still, getting some of their aggression out. I mean, I trained at an inner city rec center for a number of years, and in the boxing gym, there was always respect. I mean, there would be, sometimes a little bit of bad blood, but anytime you have a sport where the people, even when they're training, are hitting each other and, trying to beat each other up, per se, even if it is only training, there's going to be some bad blood, but there was always the respect. Even a lot of the guys that, hung out on the streets outside the rec center, because we were in a rough neighborhood. It was, you could see, a couple of abandoned crack houses right on the street and everything.
Yeah.
Nobody ever really messed around where the rec center was, because they knew it was an area for, kids to, try to better themselves. And one thing that really helped us out, this was before the mixed martial arts really became, really popular, like it did earlier this past decade. We had a guy there. Now, he was a martial artist. He just did, mainly karate and, things like that. But he was so highly respected that a lot of these street hoodlums wouldn't mess around there because they were afraid of him, because they knew he was a badass dude. But you'd see sometimes in the basketball courts where, you'd have more of the kids, that's where you'd have more of the acting up. I remember the one time I was coming out of the boxing gym, I was going over to the soda machine to get a Gatorade, and you could hear gunshots erupting from the basketball court. Where did everybody run to? The boxing gym.
Nice.
We all went. Everybody went inside. There was 30 people in the boxing gym hiding. I'm like, oh, great. I'm trying to get my Gatorade and finish my workout.
Wow.
You have a lot of kids. It's good for them because it keeps them away from the messing around.
Yeah. Positive goal, of course, yeah. I think there's a little bit of a respect lost in the boxing gym versus a karate or taekwondo, program. And I think a little bit of that is lost in the mixed martial arts as well. I think there needs to be some more structure and curriculum to martial arts in general, especially mixed martial arts. But as far as boxing gyms in Colorado, I haven't been real impressed with the whole respect issue and stuff. But if I came up through the karate background, there's, balance of the sensei and showing respect for the mat, balance on and off the mat and stuff. And I think some of those things are key for just creating structure, especially for children and grown-ass men, of course. So there needs to be a little bit more structure in mixed martial arts as well, especially during the training.
Yeah, coming from military school, I can definitely appreciate structure.
Yeah.
So I know you had to go teach a class, they told us. So did anybody you want to give a shout-out to or thank or say hello to out there?
Thank my sponsors, and I'm creating an affiliate program to start teaching some life skills, correct Thai boxing, and just doing seminars and just sharing the knowledge, man. So check out DwayneBang.com and go from there. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. It's been great talking to you. I know you're not going to need it, but wish you luck in the big fight with Amir.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. So there you go. There's Dwayne Bang Ludwig, one of the first guys I think we've ever had on here on the show that's been in both Strikeforce and UFC pretty much equally. He's also around the Ring of Fire League. Talked about being in K1. He's really been all around the world and back again. He'd make a great documentary covering his career. Been the king of the cage as well. Obviously a very well-rounded guy who does training as well as fighting, so one of our better interviews in a while, I think, for the MMA circles. get Daniel Downs on the phone. He's 7-1. He had one loss by submission, also in the UFC, although it was the WEC then, back in June of 2000.
Now, Rick, let me ask you, how do you spell the last name of our guest that was just on?
Ludwig, L-U-D-W-I-G.
Okay. He's the one that knocked out Jens Pulver, right?
Yep.
Okay. I'm texting some of my friends, and I figured they would be interested in hearing that.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of funny because one of the most famous Massachusetts guys is Joe Lauzon in MMA.
My one buddy loves Joe Lauzon. That's his favorite fighter.
He also.
I told him when he was here, he's like, "Isn't he a cool guy?" I'm like, "Dude, he was way cool. Really, that's awesome." I'm like, "Yeah, Joe Lauzon's a great interview." My friend's like, "Oh, he's my favorite man because I like him because he has a, and they call him Joey Ears because he has kind of big ears just like I do." I'm like, "Okay." I'm like, I'll tell him you said hi and you like his ears.
Yeah, it's been a while since Joe fought, but I think he's actually got a fight coming up in one of the next few UFCs. I read that recently. But I don't have it in front of me right now, but I'll find out before the end of the show here. Dwayne has quite an interesting background. He beat Jens Pulver back in 2003, January of 2003, in another league. Wasn't even in the UFC. Although he fought his next fight at UFC 42, Dwayne did. He beat Jens Pulver at something called UCC 12, adrenaline, in the first round at the 113 mark. So, pretty tough guy. And that was during the six-fight win streak. Pretty impressive. I think that's the biggest win streak he's had in his career because he's fought just so many tough guys over the years. He just started off so strong. He only had two losses in what looks like his first dozen fights here. Yep, first 12 fights, he only had two losses, back-to-back losses in 2000 and 2001. And, pretty impressive background there. But Daniel Downs, he's coming off a win against Tikon Zhang, decision win at WEC 53 back in December of last year. Unanimous decision. He lost to Chris Hordecki, took his first loss in his career before that at WEC 49 in June of 2010. And he's beaten everybody else. Tough guy. I know that his next fight isn't going to be in the UFC, but we'll have to ask him what happened there, whether he's coming back or his contract ran out, what happened there. We'll figure that out when we get him on the line. But before we do, I just wanted to give a quick hit on wrestling. I think you'll like this pro wrestling story. Mick Foley, known better as Mankind in WWE.
I dressed up with him three times for Halloween.
Yeah, he's auctioning off Mr. Socko and Bloody Soul for charity. And he's going to give up his sock puppet for a good cause. And fans will remember it from the infamous match against Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
I remember, sure.
Yeah, it's going to include other items from his wrestling career. And it's already started on Wednesday, yesterday. And he's going to sell a bloody shirt, he's in the ring, an elastic wristband, and other items worn during his matches. And for some reason, there's a big advertisement covering this in details here. And this article doesn't tell you where all this stuff is going to go. Lost Tony again.
And there you are.
Yeah, I guess we'll just add there's a big advertisement covering over this, all the details of this.
Well, the last thing I heard before you cut out was he's selling a bloody shirt.
Yeah.
Who the hell wants a bloody shirt?
I guess maybe the cops, if they want to do a DNA check.
Yeah, well, okay, yeah, maybe. I mean, yeah, that's kind of odd.
Yeah.
Shirt. I wouldn't mind a sock puppet as long as it wasn't on his foot.
But I guess you'll have to just Google that if you want to find out the details on how to get in on that auction. It sounds like it's online. Don't know much about it. So I just kind of came across this article and didn't realize that the pertinent parts would be covered over. Anyway, we got Daniel Downs probably waiting for us here. Got hooked up on the call. And see what he has to say about his next fight.
Hello?
Hi, Danny.
Hey, how's it going?
Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron here. We got Tony the Tornado on the line with us as well.
Yo. Hey, Tongue of the Tornado. I've never met you, but I'm intrigued. Anyone with a name like that's got to be good.
Yeah, I was a Philadelphia fighter for a long time. Fought in the college ranks. Almost had to fight Rich for the national title. And I trained with a lot of really good boxers. Some of them have made it onto HBO and world title fights.
Awesome, man. I thought you were just a ladies' man, but hey, that still sounds good too.
Well, you know, that's kind of my.
Well, he's like, well, you know, I mean, I did that too, but I didn't want to just brag.
what's going on with your fight career here? You got a fight coming up, right?
Yep, actually, tomorrow night at the Pottawatomie Casino in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Very rare we get people that are on the show the night before a fight, so thanks.
Yeah, well, yeah, just be thankful you got me after I got my post-weigh-in meal in. Otherwise, I would have been pretty cranky and ornery, so right now I'm just on cloud nine. I actually have food in my belly.
Yeah, I know those feelings, man. I know those feelings.
Yeah.
So what do you know about this guy you're going to be fighting?
Sorry, choking for me.
Everything
I know about him I kind of figured out when I saw him at weigh-ins today. His name's Tori Bogus, which is also a cool name, not as good as yours, Tornado, but it's still a decent name. A lot of the stuff, it's hard to find a lot of info on him. He's kind of like one of those guys. He's always good as long as like he can come forward. You know, he likes to in the offense and he likes to start strong and come hard. But, you know, as long as you take care of his first initial attack, he'll kind of wither as time goes on.
Right. Now, I had a couple fights in the WEC. Is that, is your contract run out or is it just a matter of merger or something?
Yeah, it's just I'm still technically under contract with Zuffa. They're just being gracious enough to let me kind of take a fight outside the organization because, you know, it's a big backlog at lightweight. So, it's definitely a rare opportunity. They don't usually let too many guys do that. So thankful that they're letting me do that to kind of keep me sharp. And I hope to, take care of business tomorrow night and then be fighting in the UFC when they come to Milwaukee in August. That's what that would be the ideal.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, not too many. I wouldn't have anybody given that deal. So that's awesome. Set a new standard.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even Fedor didn't get it, right? But, I mean, it's not the same thing. I'm fine on, like, a local show. So, you know, they're being real good to me. So, you know, I hope to return the favor.
They must really like you.
I guess. It must be my boyish good looks or something.
Now, looking back on your career, who would you say was your toughest opponent so far in your best fight?
Definitely the last fight I had at the WEC 53 against Bin Zhang. I went into that fight. It was, you know, the best training camp of my career. I looked great. I felt great. you know, obviously there was a lot on the line because everyone knew about the WC-UFC merger. And I got in there, and the first round went terrible. It was awful. He got me down, took my back. I fought a bunch for naked, you know, two different armbar attempts. I was just like, oh, my God. It was just awful. But, you know, just stayed strong, let my conditioning and my training took over. And then the second, third round, I just got on top of him, just kind of, you know, pounded him out, and then ended up getting the unanimous decision victory. So it was great to get that, you know, on WEC, you know, 53, the last WEC card. And then, you know, later that night, my training partner, Anthony Pettis, you know, beat Ben Henderson to the lightweight title. So that has definitely been the highlight of my career so far.
Yeah, with the Showtime kick that made him famous, too.
Yeah, exactly. The infamous, yeah, the Showtime kick got him. I even got him on CNN, which was surprising. Everyone was geeked about that.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I was actually one of the guys that was familiar with the movie star there. There's a Tony Jaa that did that in the movies.
Right, yeah, the whole, like, Ung Bak thing, so.
Right.
Hey, I mean, exactly, you know, some of these other UFC partners have Steven Seagal with the movie, action movie star. Well, we just create our own action movie star moves in the cage.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. I find it hard to believe that Steven Seagal supposedly helped Lyoto Machida perfect that karate kid crane kick.
I told you it was Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah, it was, exactly. You know what, instead of thinking Steven Seagal, you should be thinking Ralph Macchio or something, you know?
Yeah, the only difference was he didn't put his arms up like the movie.
Yeah, exactly. That would have added to it a little bit more, but it was still pretty sweet to see.
Now, is there anybody out there that you like to watch in particular, or you consider your favorite fighter?
I'm a big fan of Nick Diaz. He's probably my favorite fighter. You know, I know he's kind of polarizing. I like his attitude in the cage. I like the way he fights. Obviously, you know, Anderson Silva. Just, you know, he's so slick on the stand and stuff. But yeah. Nick Diaz. I even have my Don't Be Scared Homie t-shirt. I got that for a birthday last month, so I rep that whenever I can.
Yeah, he's definitely a character, that's for sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I would say, if there's nothing better than Nick Diaz fights and Nick Diaz interviews. Those are always a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, I loved the one after his last fight with Ariel Helwani when he interviewed him after Paul Daly, Petri Fuck.
Yeah.
About the money situation. He said he was going to be suspended for what happened in the cage. Ariel kept trying to press him on what he thought he was going to be suspended on. He was just off the wall talking about all these different things. And, you know, he said, never know what's going to come out of the guy's mouth.
Now, that's the thing. You watch some interviews with him, he won't say anything for the first, you know, 15 questions, but then the last one, then, you know, he'll give you a pretty sweet kind of 10-minute monologue.
Yeah, I think during that talking about how he's not getting paid enough and they're working him too hard. And then he wants to go up to Fox. Then I heard Scott Coker responding to that in a later interview where he said, just bought a new Ferrari. I don't see how he's not making enough money. But anyway, get back to your situation. Do you have a favorite submission style, or do you like to strike?
I'm definitely probably striking. I'm just kind of, I guess, you know, if I had to choose, I'd definitely, you know, strike first, ask questions later. But I have been working, you know, like all over my game, you know, just like everyone has to nowadays. You know, Ben Askren just joined our team, Olympic wrestler, so really been trying to work that, you know, and trying to, you know, get takedowns down. You know, I tell people, whether you want to keep it standing, go to the ground, you know, wrestling is what sets the tone. If you want to keep it standing, you got to have good wrestling. If you want to get a guy down, you know, you want to have good wrestling. So I'm just trying to kind of add that new, you know, facet to my game.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to me to watch as a former wrestler myself, actually. Ironically, I mean, I don't brag about it too much, but I was a KV state champ back in the day.
Nice.
3 years in high school, but I did get that one big accolade. But it's kind of funny watching MMA and seeing how much the takedowns get scored. around sometimes, just let a guy get in the takedowns. So it's a very important skill to the sport. But it started off as one of the major bases, obviously, of boxing and the striking from the martial arts, as well as boxing comes into it. But the wrestling just seems to be such a core discipline these days, especially when you have guys like George St. Pierre, even though he didn't use much wrestling in the last fight. There's one of our best, and that's been a strength over the years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for better or for worse, yeah, you know, in the judge's eyes, the wrestling and the takedown has means a lot. So, you know, if you give that up a lot, then you can't get it. It definitely kind of, you know, it definitely inhibits your ability to impress those judges.
Hang on one second. I think we lost Tony. I'm just going to reconnect him.
So okay.
Ringing. That's it. With the league, UFC.
I'm having a rough time tonight.
Yeah.
We've had some real bad weather in my area, you know.
Oh,
thankfully, no tornadoes.
What are you going to sound like that, Tony?
I'm telling you, man, I've lost power a couple times this week.
Yeah, actually.
Well, yeah, I mean, even though those satellite phones only do so much, though, Bin Laden had that, and then, you know, it didn't get him that, you know, it bought him 10 years, I guess, but didn't buy him more than that.
Yeah, that was pretty intense.
We had a joke going on last week. My alma mater up in Central PA, they normally get, like, you know, in the winter, like, snow squalls and, like, fast-hitting snowstorms, and back in the day, they had a real bad flood in that town. Well, apparently last week during the rash of all the bad weather, they had a lone tornado up there. So I have a friend of mine that goes up there now, Lock Haven University, and she writes on Facebook, I'm going to create a shirt that says, I survived the Lock Haven tornado 2011. I said, Jackie, they ought to have a shirt that says, Lock Haven survived the tornado from 94 to 98, that the after effects are still being felt today. She goes, when I saw you respond to that, she goes, I know I left myself wide open. I'm like, damn right. I destroyed that town. The liquor control board is still in that town 12 years after I left.
you have quite the resume. I will say that.
I gotta have fun, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, man. You gotta enjoy while you still can.
Yeah, that's right.
Dan, what would you say is your ultimate goal in the sport?
I want to kind of piggyback on what we said. You know, you gotta enjoy what you can. That's why I'm doing this. I could have, you know, out of college gone, just, you know, got a 9-to-5 or something. But, you know, when I got into this, I didn't get into this just like, oh, I'm looking to kind of kill a couple, you know, waste a couple of years' time and this and that. You know, I'm looking, I want to do this. I even told Duke when my trainer, when I got into it, like, I want to be in the big show. And, you know, obviously, you know, I'm just going to take care of the small thing tomorrow night. And then I just want to, you know, work my way up the ladder. It's, you know, it's not about fame or fortune, although I guess those are, you know, nice little fringe benefits. It's about putting myself up against the best. You know, I don't care if I went 100-0. If I just fought scrubs my whole life, it doesn't mean much. You know, I try to tell other people, no baseball player says, you know what my goal is? I want to be the best AA baseball player ever. No, everyone wants to make it to the big show and make a splash. You know, not everyone can be a Hall of Famer, but, you know, you want to get there and you want to have a long, solid career, and that's what I'm looking for. Obviously, you can't think too far ahead. This isn't the most, you know, stable. You never know what will happen, injury, you hurt something, but... yeah, my main goal is to kind of be, you know, be in the UFC and, you know, make a name for myself.
Cool. Man, you've already broken into the WEC. That's got to be feel pretty good. It's such an early point in your career to be able to have that on your resume, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just, you know, and it's something that's still kind of surreal, even, you know, if you're like, oh, you know, WEC fighter. I was like, really, him? Like, I know him, and he's not that great, but it's, you know, it's a whirlwind. It's crazy how fast things have gone by, so I just hope to, you know, just add that UFC fighter to my resume.
Yeah,
And then maybe even I'll make a T-shirt and, you know, say the UFC survived Danny Boy Downs.
And do you have a favorite, she already asked that. Do you have any role models inside or outside the sport that helped you out along the way?
You know, I wouldn't say, you know, role models. Obviously, there's people, you know, all my teammates, my trainers, my coaches, they helped get me there. But, you know, fighting is one of those sports. You need teammates, you need that support structure, but at the end of the day, you're the only guy fighting, you know. It's whatever. It's any other team sport, you know, you have teammates, they can help you in that game, but this, it's you and another person fighting each other. So you just gotta, you know, you just, it's a lot of it's on you. But, you know, definitely, yeah, my teammates and my coaches, you know, if it wasn't for them, you know, if I just walk in with gym and hit a heavy bag of my own, there's no way I'd ever make it here. You know, I'm not that kind of natural athlete. You know, they just did, you know, everyone, for too many people to name.
Yeah, you mentioned Duke Rufus there. He's kind of quietly making a bigger name for himself than he already had with some of the up-and-coming guys in the league. What's it like working with him, and what's the best part about that relationship between coaches?
Yeah, like, I mean, I've learned literally, you know, everything I know about fighting from Duke Rufus. I've been in his gym since 2004 when I started, just as, you know, someone taking the recreational class just for, you know, just a way to kind of lose weight, get in shape, have a little fun, you know, punch things. But, you know, the best thing about training there is that it's always different. He's always, you don't rest on our laurels. It's not like you go, you learn the one thing, you just kind of keep drilling the same thing over and over. It keeps helping, keeps putting little tweaks, keeps changing it up. So even just in the striking aspect, you know, just, you know, every other month, every few months, you know, we're switching up, going totally different, just trying to add more tools to my striking, and it's, you know, that's the best part. It's frustrating because you're like, oh man, like, I was doing the last thing good. Can't we stick with doing the thing that I do well? But no, it's just that thing, just always trying to get better. There's no kind of resting. You're always improving. That's what I like about training at the gym.
Sweet. And what do you enjoy most about the sport in general? Just being involved in MMA.
Enjoy about the sport is just, I guess, I mean, the feeling. It's, you know, I hate to just kind of boil it down to that adrenaline rush, but, you know, there's nothing like that done that compares to, like, just, you know, performing in front of the people, you know, fighting, just putting yourself on the line, just, you know, it's weird, like, everything kind of, the time slows down inside that cage. You know, it's almost like, it's almost like spiritually, really, like, you find yourself in the cave. That's where you find the kind of person you are. If you're someone that's going to quit, or if you're going to, you know, battle through something hard. And that's why, you know, I really like the sport. You know, the fans are great too. It's just, it's nice because, you know, obviously the sport's growing, it's getting bigger, but it's still not at that point where, say some of the more established ones, being football, basketball, things like that. All the guys, you know, that are still there are still real approachable. It's still, you know, I feel like you can have a more kind of, like, a personal, a better relationship with the fans than you can in some of these other, you know, higher profile sports.
Yeah, I've heard that. And I think, actually, I read an interview with Ariel Helwani, who's one of the best-known MMA journalists now. And he has always been intrigued by that aspect of the sport, that even the announcer there, for the UFC, Bruce Buffer.
Bruce Buffer?
Yeah, we've had him on the show even. And he said back...
That's a good interview.
Ariel, when he was in high school even, was able to get interviews with Bruce. And the fighters have been the same way. They're always very approachable and real casual. And they don't have, you know, security guards or limousines around all the time. They buck in. They're always out in the open and ready to answer questions and friendly with the fans, definitely more than any other sport, especially for one that's so popular.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's the thing. A lot of people, you know, people that aren't familiar with it, they think, oh, these are just a bunch of hoodlums who, you know, they're tattoos and they like fighting and they're mean and they're violent. And that's not it at all. You know, every guy I met, you know, you'd be surprised the kind of people you meet. It's, you know, So it's definitely nice that people get to see that too, because they realize we're not just a bunch of, you know, thugs.
Yeah, I actually wrote an article for the Bleacher Report called The Misconceptions of MMA. And it's just a fighter thing in general. People think, oh, he's a tough British guy, you know, he can't be smart.
Yeah, he's stupid, he can't do anything else, you know, he fights because he dropped out of high school or something, you know?
There's people with PhDs in MMA. There's actually a couple of boxing lawyers even that I've heard of. We actually boxed in the same circles as one of them. From UNLV, I think. Who's that guy, Tony?
Oh, Joey Gilbert.
Joey?
Not Joey Gilbert.
Yeah,
he was from University of Reno.
Yeah, he's from University of Reno. He was a lawyer. He is one now, still. And I'm not sure if he's been fighting, but he was a boxer and a lawyer, so...
He is still fighting, as far as I know. He just got stopped a few months ago in an upset by Kasim Uma, who was a former world champion that I actually know out of Philadelphia. There was another kid. It was funny. The 1 year in the Nationals, I forget what year it was, but the one guy that Gilbert stopped was a kid from Kentucky that I was good friends with, and he also became an attorney. I'm like, that guy's an attorney. I said, what, is he defending himself? A very brilliant guy. I remember this was a guy that when we had the one boxing show at my alma mater, you know, a group of us, because these guys were good friends of mine from Kentucky, because the previous year we all snuck into a bar underage to watch the Dan LaHoya Whitaker fight. And then we all became good friends, and their hotel happened to be right next to my hotel. So after we got back from the fight, we partied all night. So the next year, they're at my alma mater, Lock Haven, which is a small town. They're like, yo, after the fight, you going to the bar? I'm like, of course I'm going to the bar. So we go there after the fight, card's over, and we're hanging, and this kid becomes an attorney. Sitting there, he goes, yo, are you fighting on the Reno card in a few weeks? I said, yeah, I am. I got picked for it this year. He goes, dude, that's going to be awesome. I'm fighting on it. This other kid fighting on it. He goes, that weekend's going to be crazy. Because he announces it in mid-bar. That's the weekend of my 21st birthday. Yet he's a lawyer.
Danny, how did you get involved in fighting in the first place? How did you get into it?
I kind of stumbled into it, really. I used to play, like, rugby in college and stuff, and it was the off-season, and I was looking for something to kind of do. You know, just kind of stay in shape and, you know, do that. And like I said, my parents never let me, you know, do karate when I was a kid, when I watched, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or stuff like that. So I was like, yeah, I'm a grown man. I'm going to go do what I want. So I did that and just kind of snowballed. I started just doing the rec class and I really liked that. And I just wanted to compete. So I started doing amateur kickboxing. Then MMA got really big. So it was hard to get, you know, kickboxing fights. So I was like, yeah, I'll just do MMA. So I had a couple amateur fights there. You know, then I turned to pro fights, and it came time to graduate from school. And I was like, you know, this is what I want to do. I want to take a shot at it. So that's what I did. And, you know, it's, like I said, just kind of piece by piece. And then a few years later, here I am with, you know, a UFC contract. I'm just still waiting to see what happens next.
And what's been your best moment in the sport so far?
The best moment, I'd still say it would probably be that Jang fight. That was kind of the, where I felt the, you know, like, whatever that feeling of, pardon?
Euphoria?
Yeah, exactly. And that's where I felt like I really, you know, saw, you know, I had won fights before and I had done other things, but that's where I feel like, yeah, I belong, you know, because even, you know, you get to WC, it's not enough to just get there. You want to win there. You don't want to just be like, oh, well, I got there, you know. No, it doesn't mean much. So I felt good for the fact that, you know, I got there, I won. I was like, yeah, you know, I belong here. And I, you know, can't wait to show people that I belong in the UFC, too.
Right. And one thing that I've noticed with the UFC in particular is there's such an emphasis on putting on a show. It's not like... They pay extra for every fight put on a show. But sometimes, you know, if you get the knockout of the night, they literally pay you extra. But for the most part, you know, it's more about just keeping the fans intrigued and keeping the audience engaged and just getting to the point where you're increasing ratings just by putting on a good cage. And that helps stick around, I think, even if you lose a fight.
That's the thing. Nobody, you know, everyone, you got to, you know, like I said, if it wasn't for the fans, you know, we wouldn't be getting paid. There wouldn't be other stuff. So you definitely have to, you know, put on a show. That's what, obviously, you know, helps you get paid, but that's how it keeps you there. You know, you got to make yourself invaluable. You know, the best example is Tyson Griffin. Lost a couple fights, but, you know, whereas other guys got cut, you know, he had all those fight of the night things and things like that. It makes him more valuable, and they want to keep him around. So, you know, that's definitely what you want to try to do. Obviously, you want to win every fight, but, you know, that's kind of impossible to do. But, you know, so just you got to put on a show, and it'll definitely give you to the fans. It'll make you a very happy and prosperous man.
Awesome. Yeah, I've noticed actually, too, it's that whole dynamic has sort of changed in the sport in a lot of ways, where it seems it's more geared towards striking in the UFC especially. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, it's definitely evolved from, you know, there was a time where, like, jiu-jitsu was running amok, and then there were the wrestlers, you know, and then the striking was real big. Now I see I think it's kind of getting back towards the wrestlers and a lot of things like that. I mean, obviously it's become a lot more well-rounded, but it's funny to just see, you know, even when I started watching it, you know, 2005 and stuff, just, you know, you watch the fights then, and compared to the fights you see now, you can see how much better all the guys got. Just the caliber of the fighters is just huge. So everyone's up their game in a very short amount of time.
Right. Yeah, some of the rule differences, too, have been interesting to watch. I know we talked to Chris Lytle a few months ago, and he says he really misses being able to headbutt people.
It'd probably be pretty fun to headbutt anyway. I never had a fight where I could do that. But, I suppose though, I was pretty glad they put that rule into place.
Yeah, there's got to be a good reason for it. All right, well, is there anybody that you want to thank or give a shout-out to?
Just want to give a shout-out to sponsors, Form Athletics and, you know, Better Life Farms. Let's just thank all my teammates and coaches for getting to this point. Just I want to just follow me on Twitter. It's Danny Boy Downs. Just looking forward to taking care of business tomorrow night, and pretty soon you'll see me all over your UFC broadcast.
Well, it's been great having you on, and you got any predictions for the fight coming up tomorrow?
Tomorrow night, I'm not sure if it's going to be submission or knockout, but I'm picturing myself beating him latter half of the first round. So I'd say probably about 4 minutes into the first, Mr. Bogus is going down.
Mr. Bogus.
Right. Mr. Bogus, I know. That's why, I wish I could fight a guy with a name like that every time. It's just the options are endless.
Well, that's going to be the bogus fight of the week, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I will prove that his fight skills are indeed bogus.
All right. Well, it's been awesome talking to you, and we wish you the best of luck. We'll be looking out for you on the big stage again as soon as you get back there.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. I really appreciate it.
Have a good day.
Yep.
Good
luck to you, man. We'll be talking to you soon, I hope.
So there we go. Danny Downs is going to be fighting Mr. Bogus tomorrow night.
Mr. Bogus. That's a pretty good name, though.
Yeah. But I imagine it got him in a lot of trouble during his school days. Probably that's actually what leads a lot of these guys into fighting, too. Picked up with our kids. We talked to actually Kun Lee twice now. I've had an interview with him here on the last one. And he actually was picked on a lot when he was a kid. So that got him into martial arts. And now he's actually a martial arts movie star. He's talking about he might not be back to fighting. He's got so many gigs in the movie industry now. He's definitely not going to be fighting again this year, but he is keeping the option open, I guess. I just read an article about that.
Getting picked on is nice to work out Tyson started.
Yeah, the pigeon's head ripped off in front of
him. Yeah, he was messing with his pigeons. You don't mess with Tyson's pigeons.
mess with the man's pigeons.
Yeah, he's got the, I still haven't seen that episode yet, but he's got the pigeon racing show now.
Yeah, neither have I haven't either. But,
yeah, I remember them saying, you know, once he was messing with him, like you said, Tyson was such a sissy growing up, you know, girls used to beat him up, you know, and then that one kid pushed that wrong button, and he snapped, and then next thing you know, he's walking down the street, and people are, and grown adults are crossing the street to keep away from him.
Yeah, actually, I'd love to get Tyson on the show sometime. He lives out
here.
Oh,
my God, that would be awesome.
In Nevada.
Yeah, but we'd want to talk about his career, and he'd be like, yeah, I don't remember that. I don't want to talk about that. I just want to talk about my pigeons. Back when Tyson was fighting Lewis back in 2002, and this is obviously well before I started doing the Fight News Unlimited with you, and so the fight's coming up, and my dad's like, I think Tyson's going to take him. He's going to get right inside there. He's going to rip him apart. Lewis, you got the chin to take him. And this is a year after Lewis had gotten knocked out by Taslim Rahman, one punch. My dad said, Tyson's going to get him. I'm like, Dad, I just can't see it happening. I was matching the fighters up in my mind. And I'm like, Tyson right now, he's not moving his head enough. He's too flat-footed. He's only throwing one punch at a time. I said, he's not going to do enough. And my dad said, no, I think he's going to do it. I'm like, all right, let's bet a breakfast on it. So we bet the breakfast, and we're getting there. And they're doing, like, the pre-fight interviews. And they're like, so, Mike, you know, how do you feel? Like, you haven't been getting mentally ready for this fight. I've just been spending time with my pigeons. I just want to be with my pigeons. My dad's like, oh, shit. And Tyson came out in that first round, like, you know, like gangbuster. And after that, he was done. He just did nothing. And, yeah, he had to take me to breakfast the next morning.
I actually found an old interview with Tyson and Muhammad Ali and Sugar Ray Leonard on the Arsenio Hall show, of all shows.
Wow.
Way back.
That's what? Classic.
I'd never even seen this before or heard of this interview. And I'm watching it, and it was when Muhammad Ali was a little more articulate than he is now. He's still a little bit shaky, but he could, you know, he could talk much better than he could. Distinguish everything that he was saying. And they asked him, of course, you know, who would have won between you and Tyson, and he said, hands down, it would be Tyson, because you know, once he hit him, that would be it. He said, I'd be faster, maybe, and I'd be able to run around the ring, but once he hit me, that would be it.
Oh, wow.
And Tyson, of course, played that off and said, no way, you know, you were the greatest. But it's a really good interview. You should look for that. I'll send it to you.
Well, I'll say, this was before Tyson really went on the decline. So this was back in the early 90s. He had already lost to Buster Douglas, but everybody was considering that more of a fluke than anything. So he'd already lost to Buster Douglas. And so, you know, they did an article, and I think it was like Ring Magazine. It was like, how would have Tyson matched up against the all-time greats? This is, you know, Holyfield was still champ at the time when this article came out, so he wasn't even, you know, mentioned in there, but it was guys like Dempsey, Jack Johnson, Marciano, Liston, Joe Lewis, Ali, George Foreman. So the way it's graded out, it had, I remember a lot of it too, it had Tyson knocking out Dempsey in like 2 rounds, just destroying him. It had Tyson stopping Jack Johnson, which right now you ask anybody that, they're going to, like, laugh in your face. It had Tyson beating Liston, you know, wearing him down with a body attack, knocking him out. It had Tyson beating the prime George Foreman. It had Tyson beating Marciano on cuts. It had Tyson, you know, getting off the canvas and knocking out Joe Lewis. So, I mean, this article was really building up Mike Tyson. At the time, like I said, he was, like, 40-1 or 38-1 or something ridiculous like that. And everybody's saying that one loss was a fluke. Okay. The two fighters that would have beaten Mike Tyson in his prime, who were they?
The two fighters who would have beaten Jack Dempsey.
Two fighters who would have beaten Mike Tyson.
Mike Tyson. Jack Dempsey and Muhammad Ali.
Nope, Tyson knocked Dempsey out in 2 rounds.
I don't know.
You got Ali right. Give you one more guess.
Rocky Marciano.
Nope, he beat Marciano on cuts in 6 rounds.
Oh, I don't know amount of guesses.
Give you one more, and I'll give you a hint. I'll give you a hint. It was my first Fantasy Dream Fights article.
Oh, I think I'm going to remember that. That was ancient history. That was like 4,000 articles ago.
Yeah, true. But it was the first one I wrote. This is the one that inspired me to do it. From the great fighting city of Philadelphia. And no, it's not Rocky Balboa. The night that Tyson knocked out his son, he was the one that stared Tyson down in the opening fight instructions.
Knocked out his son?
Yeah.
I'm just having a brain fart here, I guess.
Where there's smoke, there's fire.
Oh, Joe Frazier?
Smoking Joe Frazier. It picked up Prime Frazier to be Prime Tyson. And when I wrote my article, you know, this is obviously more in hindsight than anything, because the Mike Tyson in the late 80s in his prime was considered invincible. I remember when I wrote my article, it was years later where I'd seen Tyson, you know, get beat by Holyfield. I saw Tyson struggle in certain fights. You know, I saw him, you know, eventually get dismantled by Lennox Lewis. But what really was, you know, the build-up for me was the fact that Mike Tyson was a guy that really struggled when he had to move backwards, and he was a guy that beat guys off intimidation. You could not and would not intimidate Joe Frazier. You know, King Kong could not intimidate Joe Frazier. You know, and you're looking at the guy that George Foreman knocked down 6 times. The man got up 6 times. You know, they stopped it. He was hurt. But if that referee didn't stop that fight, they'd still be fighting to this day. And Frazier'd still be getting up. That's what I think. I mean, if Frazier could have survived the early rounds of that fight, he would have beaten Mike Tyson. And I think he would have stopped him personally. You know, he would have just kept cranking. And then he would have got Tyson to stop throwing his right hand, because every time he did, a left hook would be slamming somewhere on the right side of his body, whether it was the side, whether it was the shoulders, whether it was the arm, whether it was the jaw, whether it was the top of the head. Frazier would have kept cranking that left, and Tyson would have started backing up, and then he would start to get, you know, in his mind a little bit, starting to doubt. And that would have been, you know, what would have been the difference.
Right. Well, it's kind of funny to hear, because a lot of people compare Tyson's left hook to Joe Frazier's. But actually, one of the points that was made in our last interview there about fighters getting a reputation for being just brutish, dumb thugs, you know, if you listen carefully, when Tyson speaks, and you know, he has a chance to talk about the history of boxing and what he knows about it, you realize that guy's actually very smart, especially when it comes to the sport and his characters. And I saw another interview when I was kind of surfing around on YouTube. It actually wasn't even an interview, it was like a show, banquet type of thing, where they were saluting Tyson for his career, and he talked about how his favorite fighter was actually Jack Dempsey. And he talked about how Jack Dempsey was scared to death to fight, you know? And he felt the same way through all of his fights. You know, he never went in there without being nervous and just incredibly scared that he was going to lose. So, like, in that one Rocky movie where he talks about how fear is your friend. But it's actually
right.
I mean, sort of interesting. And also, speaking of George Foreman, you mentioned him. I will get a chance to be on a conference call with him next Tuesday. They're actually going to have a conference call with Bernard Hopkins and George Foreman on the same call.
Wow.
Anyway.
I would like to be on that, except my stupid job won't let me.
I don't know if they're going to be on at the same exact time, if there's going to be any overlap, but I think George comes on first and then Bernard, because I guess they're going on the theme of Bernard being breaking George's record for being the oldest fighter to win a significant world title. So,
I don't think it's going to happen, though. You know why?
Why?
Bernard's going to have to knock him. Bernard kicked the shit out of the guy the last time. He kicked the living shit out of him. He didn't win the fight. Bernard has to win that fight by knockout. He's not knocked somebody out in 7 years. He's got to win that fight by knockout. I don't think he can kick the shit out of him any worse than this. Only thing was two flash knockouts were the only things against him in that fight. And other than that, he kicked the shit out of the guy. 10 out of the 12 rounds.
Right.
Didn't get the decision.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Definitely see. But I'm looking forward to that. I know that we've actually had George's daughter. I did an interview with her way back in the day. One of his daughters.
Frida?
Yeah, Frida. Frida George.
I'm surprisingly named it in Georgina.
Yeah. And obviously, George is at a new stage in his life with getting involved in his son's career as a boxer monk. They call him. He's done pretty well. Still undefeated as a heavyweight. So it's going to be interesting to hear him talk about all that and looking back at his career. But it's promised to give everybody an update on Joe Lozon. He's going to be fighting Kurt Warburton on June 26th in your favorite town, Pittsburgh. So, you there, Tony? We lose you? You hang up on me? Yeah, we lost you.
Take four.
I just mentioned Pittsburgh too, saying that's your favorite town. There's dead air.
What? You know I hate Pittsburgh.
That's where Joe Lozon's next fight's going to be against Kurt Warburton. You know, promised I'd update everybody on that. So there you have it. And one thing we haven't talked about all show, I know it's not technically combat sports related, but it is combat related, of course, the Osama bin Laden hit. We got him.
I know. My father was thrilled with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think everybody was. One thing that I kind of been miffed about, though, is the way that they've just been telling different stories about what exactly happened. Like, every day the story changes. It's like, come on, you know? Talking about, oh, well, you know, if we put the pictures out there, there's going to be all these conspiracy theories. Well, you don't even have to put the picture out there. You tell 9 different stories every day, you know, there's going to be conspiracy theories no matter what. So,
yeah, I know.
It's just ridiculous. But it was something I felt the need to put on the website, too, because it was such big news. And then the pictures, I don't know if you heard this, but there was pictures that were put out years ago that were fake. They photoshopped pictures of him dead, and it's actually fooled a couple senators on the Armed Services Committee. They said that they've already seen the pictures, but they turned out to be the fakes. And what blows me away is the news. They don't even go out there and post those pictures to tell people what to look out for as far as, you know, what's fake and what's real. And here they are saying they want to see these pictures, they want to publish these pictures, but they won't even publish the fake one to show people that it's not real.
Right.
and
my boss at work seems to think it's a hoax. He thinks that Bin Laden's been dead for years.
Yeah, I've been reading a lot about that. I actually have a former English teacher that I still keep in touch with, who was a Kennedy assassination researcher. So he's big up on all the conspiracies and everything. And he's right up to the point where he thinks 9/11 was a complete inside job and all that. I don't know if I go that far.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, I don't know if I go that far. You know, I believe in a lot of these conspiracies and that the government is always telling stories, but that's one thing I don't go that far with most of my analysis. It just doesn't seem right. The farthest I would go on that is that maybe they knew that this was going to happen, but they thought it was just going to be hijackings, you know, and they just kind of dismissed it, you know, because there was proof that the FBI and the CIA weren't talking to each other, and there were reports that the hijackings could happen, but I don't think they ever could have predicted the hijackings ending up with crashing into the World Trade Center.
Right.
But either way, you know, it's definitely a good thing the way that people have been responding. And sounds like, you know, there's going to be a new call for bringing all the troops home, which is great stuff. One of the big projects I've been working on over the last couple of years is to do a memorial for a guy that was on my boxing team back when I was at Norwich, and that's actually going to kick off with his dedication of his plaque in Brockton on Memorial Day this year. So I guess that's great timing to go along with that. You know, mission accomplished for real now, a lot of people are saying. So, you know, it just goes to show you that, you know, it all comes together eventually. You know, it's sad that a lot of people had to sacrifice their lives for this war on terror, but, you know, that's what they sign up for. So at least we can recognize them for that. A lot of people show up for that and show their respects. And his plaque will be at the War Memorial Building in Brockton forever. So looking forward to going and checking that out. Other than that, what do we got for boxing coming up other than Pacquiao versus Mosley? You got anything on the radar there, Tony? I need to go to boxing.
Let's look at the tornado door. The Doppler. Let's look at the tornado Doppler. That's what we got going here. I like that. The tornado Doppler. I think that's pretty good.
Yeah. Well,
I want to see if there's anything, because a lot of times they'll be like the night before, they'll be like a big card.
Tornadoes aren't very popular these days, especially after the gigantic one that blew through Alabama. Killed like 249 people just in Alabama alone.
Well, you know what? Actually, you want to talk about something, and it's not funny, but it's like, just talk about this. Always happens to me, you know. There is a pitcher for the Phillies, Roy Oswalt. They got him in a trade last year. He's one of their four aces. He left the team last year. He left the team last week for personal reasons after the tornadoes came and like destroyed the entire, city where his family lives, his like wife and kids and all that. And he just returned to the team today. Now he said his childhood home last year got destroyed by a tornado. And now it's, you know, he was gone from the team for a week because he was so worried about his family with this, you know, with this bad weather down in his neighborhood. What does the back of my Phillies jersey say? Tornado. I'm like, this guy's going to see me and, like, punch me in the face. Well, just taking a look real quick, some of the fights on tomorrow night in California. We got one of my dad's favorite fighters, Librado Andrade. He's fighting Aaron Pryor Jr., who looks nothing and fights nothing like his father. Father was a whirlwind, mile-a-minute type fighter. Aaron Pryor Jr. is very tall, long arms, more of a boxer. That's the main fight on that card. Montebello, California, you've got Roberto Garcia versus Calvin Odom. Don't know, it's an eight-round fight. The only fight on the card. Don't know much there. And then in Nevada, I guess the night before, you know, we have the main fight. Biggest fight on that card is Diego Magdaleno versus Gilberto Sanchez Leon. Let's go to the seventh, the big one. Let's see what we got going there. Let's talk about some of the other fights on the Pacquiao Mosley card. Let's see what the hell is it. This is going to be a good fight here. Wilfredo Vasquez Jr. Versus Jorge Arce. Arce, a tough little bugger. He's on the downside of his career. Vasquez Jr., 5'6", much bigger fighter. 20-0 with 17 knockouts, one draw in there. RSA has been around probably since the Reagan administration, at least it seems that way. 56-6, two draws, 43 knockouts, three of his losses by knockout. Also on that card, another very interesting fight, we got the return of Kelly Pavlik. Pulling that up right now, I'll talk a little bit more about this. We got Kelly Pavlik coming off his last fight was a year ago, which was the loss to Sergio Martinez by decision. Pavlik is 36-2, 32 knockouts, moving up to 168 pounds now. He's fighting an undefeated fighter by the name of Alfonso Lopez. Like I said, Lopez is undefeated, but not a lot of guys know a lot about him. His last fight was against a guy 11-2. He stopped him in 12 rounds. You know, I'm looking at his card. I don't recognize any names on the card of anybody he's fought. But he is 21-0, 16 knockouts, so this will be a good test for Kelly. He's fought as high as 179 pounds, so he's a very big guy. In that fight, he was at 167, so Pavlik's moving up. We've got to see if he can you know, bring his power up with him. And then the final fight to discuss on that card, stupid thing about that, is Mike Alvarado versus Sugar Ray Knarr. Sugar Ray Knarr is also another guy that's been you know, making some headlines. He's 25-1 with 21 knockouts. Mike Alvarado is 29-0 with 21 knockouts. This is definitely a crossroads fight. So for the vacant WBC Intercontinental Light Welterweight Championship, we got two, like I said, two crossroads fights. We got two very good fighters here. And, you know, we're going to see what happens.
Did you know there's an Evander Holyfield fight even this weekend?
Oh, my God, yes, I did. I was trying to forget about that.
Yeah, he's weird, sort of a weird fight. Of course, it's overseas. I don't think they let him fight in America anymore. So let me just bring it up here. We got Evander Holyfield versus... Brian Nielsen. Holyfield's 43-10, 28 knockouts, 2 draws. Fighting a 12-round heavyweight fight with Brian Nielsen, who's 64-2 with 43 knockouts. I've never heard of this guy. He's got 64 wins.
Brian Nielsen?
Yeah. Never heard.
Brian Nielsen, back in the day, you're going to laugh about this. Brian Nielsen was fighting strictly over in Denmark or wherever the hell he's from. And he amassed the record of 48-0, got to the magic 48-0. And he never fought. I mean, he's fighting all guys that were set ups. Never fought for a world title, but he's 48-0, and he's going to break the record. They bring in some schlub, and I can't even remember the guy's name.
Dickie Ryan.
That knocked him out. Look at Nielsen's record. Look at his first loss. He's 48-0, and look at the guy's record to beat him. And then he had a fight back in, like,
47-4.
What?
The guy who beat him was 47-4 back in 99. His name was Dickie Ryan.
What was the guy's name?
Dickie.
What was it?
Dickie Ryan.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody ever heard of him. And then his only other loss was a stoppage loss to Mike Tyson. They said Tyson just basically beat the living shit out of him.
Back in 2001, when Tyson was 48-3. And as well, this guy, Nielsen's last win was against a guy named Uriah Grant back in 2002. So he's coming off the shelf. 9 years later, over 9 years later, to fight Holyfield in Denmark. And like the folks over in Europe love to do, they have a female fight as the co-main event of this card. Looks really interesting. It's Cecilia Breakhus, who's undefeated at 17-0, 4 knockouts, fighting Chevelle Schellbach, who's 28-6, 2 draws and 11 knockouts. And it's for the WBC, WBA, and WBO female welterweight title. 10-rounder. And they do 2-minute rounds over there. The females, I guess, Denmark. It's going to be interesting. other than that, so we do have a mismatch of the week here worth talking about. Get a load of this one. This might be the mismatch of the freaking century. We got super featherweights over in Italy. And the, what makes this really a mismatch of the week, month, year, century, is it's for a title. We have the super featherweight title of Italy on the line here between Devis Boschero, who's 27-0 with one draw, 12 knockouts, fighting Luigi Mantegna, who's 1-23. Granted, his one win is by knockout. So he does have technically a puncher's chance. And the co-main event, we have another mismatch. Christian Sanavia, who's 43-5, one draw, 13 knockouts, fighting Pavels Lotas, who's 5-13, one draw, 3 knockouts. So there you go. Pretty lopsided there. They like their Italians to win, I guess.
Yeah.
Bringing in the other guys to take dives. I don't know if they're going to need to even take dives, being outclassed that much. And pretty much does it, I think, for the major boxing schedule. So let's just run down the MMA fights coming up this weekend real quick, the big ones anyway. We got the AFO in Massachusetts putting on a show tomorrow night in Fall River. AFL Uncensored, whatever that means. Bellator Fighting Championships 43 taking place on Saturday in Newkirk, Oklahoma. Let's see what else we got. Cage Conflict 9 in Blackburn, England. Elite 1 in Moncton, New Brunswick, Canada. I think actually Butterbean is going to be fighting on that card. We just saw something on Facebook about Butterbean coming to Moncton. I didn't get a chance to read up on it, though. But it sounds like that must be what they're talking about. Let's see what else we got. MFA New Generation 5 in Miami, Florida on Saturday. CFX The Reckoning from Alexandria, Minnesota. We got the Throwdown Showdown from Liberal, Kansas. Elite Championship Cage Fighting 16 from Charlotte, North Carolina on Saturday. Total Fight Challenge 20 from Willow Springs, Illinois. Absolute Action MMA 13 from Florence, Kentucky. Throwdown in Fairfield 2.
Oh, shit. I didn't know we were ripping up that fast.
And we got two events on Sunday. KFC 5 from the Netherlands. And Rings the Outsider 16 from Yokohama, Japan. I think that about does it for this week's show. We'll see you guys next week, or you'll hear us
next week.
And we'll try to get some boxers on the show. If not Teddy Atlas, who we've been trying to get a hold of and in touch with, but he's very elusive. He's not willing to embrace the internet, I guess, for the email communication. So we gotta go old fashioned and get him on the phone somehow. But we're working on it, so hopefully we'll get him on. If not, we'll have some excerpts from the George Foreman call next Tuesday. And until then, adios and thanks for stopping by.
Happy Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah, that too.
See you later.
Go Bruins.